This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. What better way to start 2024 than by bringing awareness to your BFRB? My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off the replacement training bundle.
My name's Narelle. I am 28 and I live in a small country town in Australia, so kind of towards the bottom of Australia, a really beautiful part of the world. I have had, I guess, in terms of BFRBs, or I guess you could say the self-soothing aspect of body-focused repetitive behaviors, I've had that, like talking to my parents, I've had that since almost birth. So I guess from very, very early stages, my family could see that, I guess you could say like thumb sucking is a normal thing, but for me it was very persistent. I had a lot of like self-soothing things like the thumb sucking. I would be persistently touching my hair as soon as it would start growing through. And nail biting was a thing as soon as I was physically able. So I guess in terms of those type of BFRBs, they were very like at the start. And they just kind of, I don't know, they were just part of me from the very beginning. In terms of trichotillomania, which I guess is my main BFRB that I have, that's definitely the most persistent one that I've had from then until now, that started, or at least I became aware of it maybe around like 10 to 12 years old, I think. I didn't really understand what it was at that time, but I was aware that it was a thing. I guess initially it was definitely an unconscious behavior. I guess when they say it's the automatic pulling. So for me, I would wake up in the morning from sleeping and there would just be piles of hair all through my bed. Initially, it was only small hairs, so it seemed like it was more so from my eyebrows and eyelashes. And I guess with time that progressed to having neither of those and it moved on to my scalp. So that was kind of from early high school on, where it really progressed to my scalp and it just took off. And for me, it's always been a persistent thing. It's always been part of my everyday life. It's always been my way to just self-soothe. I've always been a very anxious person. And I think that's just the way that I kind of just took care of myself. So that's how it all kind of started off. And now I'm 28 and it's still very much part of my life. In terms of like, I don't suck my thumbs anymore. That's moved on. But in terms of nail biting, that stopped completely. I'd like to just have one part. I'm like, if I can have my eyelashes and eyebrows, that's great. I have more to work with my scalp.
So I know from experience and from hearing other people that having more than one BFRB is super common. When you were younger and you were sucking your thumb and then biting your nails, what are some things that you would try to do to maybe lessen the behaviors?
I think for me, I was brought up in a quite controlling, I guess, fear-driven household. I don't want to put my parents down like they're beautiful people, but that's just the way that we were brought up. And for me, it would be more so I would hide the behavior. I'd learn to just cover it, and I'd be very, very good at just making it not seem like it's a thing, but it is a thing for me. So I guess for me, I would always hold on to the self-soothing BFRBs as a way to take care of myself, but I would try to prevent others seeing it. For me, that's how it become this really deeply ingrained behavior that just went on from then until now. And I guess with time, it's just manifested and progressed into different ways.
So you mentioned that you don't suck your thumb anymore, but were there moments where you were doing all three BFRBs at the same time?
I have no idea. It's from talking about it now with my parents, those behaviors were all happening at once, and it would kind of switch and change between which one I was doing. But I don't think it was a conscious thing. I think it was just maybe what felt right at the time within my body. So for me personally, I find I'm someone who feels my emotions at a very physical level, and I think that's why self-soothing through BFRBs is something that has ingrained quite easily.
When did you find out that there was a name for trichotillomania?
All through high school. So initially, the hair pulling aspect, that was initially automatic, so it was quite unconscious. I'd either be doing it and finding out in the morning that it had happened, so there'd be hair all through my bed, or maybe it would be happening and then I'd somehow come into the present. I'd come out of that trance, or I'd come out of that dissociative state and see what's happening. So I guess with time, I saw what was happening. And then I guess as I lost more hair, I would start seeing these bald patches, and those two things would associate together. But it wasn't really until I was maybe 17 or 18 that I discovered that it was an actual thing, that it was an actual disorder. It had a name. It was called trichotillomania. And I learned too that there was these other disorders that are part of this bundle of BFRB. I think it really just came down to me just Googling it. I just Googled hair pulling disorder, and it came with these names. And then I just started doing this initial deep dive of researching what it was. And I started looking into trying to find a way to manage that. And I guess that's when you probably remember back in the YouTube days of when I'm assuming we're probably somewhat similar in age, like we're in our late 20s, maybe mid late 20s, I'm not sure. But maybe 10 years ago, there was someone on YouTube called, I think, Becky, and she would talk about trichotillomania. She was someone that was one of the first people that I kind of got introduced to what it was and seeing it in another person. Other than that, I started looking into trying to get counseling and talking to psychologists, but a lot of this was still done kind of behind my family's back. I would kind of do it initially through schooling, or I would do it through just free services that we have in the local area. And I guess at that time when I was 18, I had my license, I had a car, I was able to get around to places easily, and I had that independence to start kind of getting on top of things by myself. I was quite secretive about the behaviors, and I was very good at covering myself and hiding it. That continued on all the way through till at least I was 18. So yeah, I tried seeking these medical professionals. Unfortunately, even now, like I haven't found it all that helpful. I've seen so many. Like it's some of the, like they've been beautiful people and I've related to them and I found them helpful in some aspects, but I think it's quite difficult with them not having that deep understanding of what this is. And you'll know, Barbara, that most people don't know about this stuff. Even if it is common, people don't know. So it is quite difficult to open up completely with a healthcare provider or a professional about these things, and for them to really understand what's going on, and to for them to maybe give the right advice, or maybe steer you in a direction that's going to be helpful. I guess for me, when I was 18, like I just had this constant mindset that I want this, this is a problem. This behavior is a problem, and I want it fixed, and I want it gone, and I feel like it's destroying my life. I always felt like it controlled me. And this continued on up until basically a year ago. So I guess for me, in terms of trichotillomania, it's been a very persistent thing. Occasionally, I would still have the nail biting, but that was more so I would purposely redirect to nail biting to stop and prevent the trichotillomania, and you'd have this bounce of between them. But trichotillomania was always the persistent one for me, and I guess really up until a year ago, it was a daily occurrence and it was to a quite severe level. And for me, like it got to the point where I would have no eyelashes, no eyebrows. I'd probably have three quarters of my hair missing. And for me, it really did have that aspect of like when you talk about trichotillomania, where it's like part of the DSM-5, and it's like, does this impact your quality of life, your well-being in various aspects of life? For me, it definitely did, and it has up until really recently. in the past year. I'm not really sure what question I'm answering at the moment, but it's so tricky because, like, because it's been tricky to Lamania, it's been part of my life almost forever, like at least 20 years. So there's just so much to talk about. And there's just, it's always been part of me, but I think the way that I have focused on it or have an understanding of it has changed dramatically over the years. Initially, it was like, this is a problem that I'm not okay with. I don't accept it. I don't want it. It makes me feel like I don't want to be here. It doesn't make me feel like I'm enough. You would have the shame, you would have the self-hatred. And I guess it would kind of just put me in a space where I felt like life wasn't that beautiful. Whereas now I find I've done this deep kind of self-development kind of phase where I've changed that mindset. As much as I don't love trichotillomania, like what it does physically, I definitely have a better understanding of it. And I'm more accepting of the idea of it and accepting of it's possible that this could be a lifelong disorder for me. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. But I'm okay with that. And I'm kind of aware that it is what it is. And I guess all I can control is just how I feel and how I think about it. And just being kind to myself, trying to really, really focus on I'm enough despite having this, and that I can be loved despite having this. And just in general, like, I can have this and be okay, and I'm okay, and still be able to live a beautiful life and appreciate everything.
When you were in school, because you were pulling while you were in school, so you're pulling your eyelashes and eyebrows, how did you handle the curiosity of your peers?
So through high, I really hated high school. Primary school was okay because I think for me, like, it didn't get to a point where I think it was noticeable. Like the physical hair loss, I don't think it was all that noticeable. I think it was more so just the nail biting, but that didn't bother me too much. In terms of high school, initially I lost all my eyelashes and I lost all my eyebrows, and it was very obvious that that had happened. And I think high school kids can be really cruel. They aren't kind in that way sometimes, and I guess their curiosity comes through in a way of maybe bullying and not just genuine curiosity, like, let's have an open discussion. For me, I guess it resulted in quite a lot of bullying, and it just turned into this slow progression of me isolating myself.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
More and more and more. So yeah, start of high school, I seemed okay. Like I always would be able to make good relationships with people. I'd have these beautiful friends. But in terms of having relationships with people or just anyone that I didn't know all that well, there was lots of fixation on it. And it was more so probably with the eyelashes and eyebrows. When it moved on to my scalp and my eyelashes and eyebrows eventually kind of recovered with time somewhat, I guess I was always really good at hiding my hair. So I would always have it tied up. So I think from maybe year 8, year 9 onwards, I always had my hair tied up. And it's only now that I'm 28. So it's only in the last 2 months where I've actually started wearing my hair down again. So that's how long is that? That's almost like 15 years. I've never worn my hair down without manipulating it, wearing wigs or hair pieces or all these different things and extensions. But yeah, like through high school, it just got to a point where I had so much hair loss that I just had to start persistently always having it tied up, and I'd just be fixating on hiding everything. And I think for me, I guess from that time on, I guess the bullying continued, but I think it was more so just not necessarily about my appearance. Maybe I thought it was about my appearance because that's what was in my mind at the time with the trichotillomania. It was probably more so about my anxiety associated with it.
So you mentioned wigs and extensions. What are some other ways that you would try to cover up your missing areas so that people at school wouldn't notice?
With my pulling, it started in the crown, so right at the back of my head. So I think it took quite a while for me to realize that that actually started becoming noticeable. One of my sisters, so I have two sisters, I'm the middle child. So I have one sister who is a year older than me and one who's 3 years younger. And I think there was just one time where my older sister just tapped me on the shoulder and she's like, "Hey, there's this bald spot in the back of your head." And I guess that's when I first realized that this turned into a physical hair loss thing. Like I physically had lost hair. I obviously realized it with my face, with my eyelashes and eyebrows, but I think I didn't realize how much impact I'd had on my scalp until someone told me. From then, initially, it would be more so like I would be brushing my hair backwards. I'd maybe just be pinning. It would just be really subtle. Like there wouldn't be too much that I would have to do to manipulate it. But I guess with time, as I lost more and more hair, that's when it turned into me having to always having it tied back. And I guess as the areas of hair loss that I had changed and it progressed and I lost more, there would have to be far more manipulating to happen. Maybe it would be like I'd be using that Topic powder, or I'd be using like different sprays that would like tint my scalp. Like I'd start having to do little things like that. Coming towards the end of high school, I had quite a lot of hair loss to the point where I couldn't hide it anymore with just playing around with the hair that I had. And that's when I first started. So I think it was when I was 18. We just mentioned earlier that this is when I discovered what it was. It had a name and I started researching more. I definitely had that first bout where it was quite severe. That's when I opened up to my mum. So I told my mum what was going on. She was obviously quite worried for me, but she is the most beautiful human. She's so selfless and she just wants me to be okay. So she and I started researching different things on what we could do to manage it. And that's where we first started with I'm trying to remember what it was called, but it's like the built-in hair kind of wigs. You've probably heard about them where they kind of like stitch them in. And it was one for the crown for my head. That was like step one of let's do something to just make me feel comfortable. And like I would just have my own hair that I can appreciate and it would all be covered. And I wouldn't, it would be a somewhat permanent solution to not having to hide it or worry about people seeing the bald patches. That was step one. And then I found for me personally, it wasn't helpful. Looking at it now, it's because it was just a short-term fix. It wasn't actually resolving any issues. It wasn't resolving any of my core beliefs that weren't that great. It was more so like a short-term fix that made me feel a little bit comfortable in terms of just physical appearance. I found it made my trichotillomania far more worse because it would start irritating my scalp so much, and it would cause so many urges, and it would just like as much as yeah, it was kind of covered and you couldn't see bald patches, it would make my trichotillomania so much worse. So I persisted with using that for quite a while. And then I think I've gone through these phases of like I'll try their built-in hair pieces, I'd try wigs, I would try extensions, and then sometimes I'd try like just different combinations. Like maybe it would be like I'd have my hair tied up but with extensions, or it would be like I'd have it half up but with a hairpiece, or like I would have these different combinations just to make it work. As much as you're putting something there to like have this hair, like it just causes even more paranoia. Like now you're just worrying about another thing that I need to like fixate on. Instead of worrying about, oh, is there a bit of a bald patch? It's like, oh, someone's going to think I'm wearing a wig. So it was just, I don't know, my anxiety surrounding my hair just turned into something else. It just moved on to the next thing. So really, ultimately, I didn't find it all that helpful.
When you were going to different counselors and therapists, did they ask you to track your pulling, like count your days and things like that?
For me, not really. So, a lot of the time when I spoke to someone, it would be more so like you just need to accept this is a behavior that you have. I don't know if it's just because they saw the severity that they thought that there was no possibility of it improving. I'm not 100% sure. That's just what I felt. But as well too, when I spoke to all these different health professionals, I've talked to so many, like at least 50, like different ones. I've tried so hard to find the right one. And I, as a healthcare professional, I understand it takes time to find the right person. But for me, like I feel like I've tried. A lot of the time they would be like, hey, we understand you have this disorder. We've tried to research what it is and have a better understanding of it, but we believe that you just need to accept it for what it is. You need to just move past it. It needs to just be part of your life. It's obviously something that you've been doing for a long time. But in terms of psychologically, they would be like, hey, we think you're too well for therapy. We think you don't need this. You just need to accept this is just how you are. It wasn't until I saw the last psychologist that I had, which was about maybe 2 years ago, and this is when I was going through a not so great phase with my ex. She was the first person who was like straight with me saying, hey, you actually have quite a lot going on. You probably have anxiety. You definitely have anxiety. You have social anxiety. You very likely have depression. At that point, I had suicide ideation. So many things were going on, as well as like the trichotillomania. And then it wasn't until later on that I realized that I was also going through domestic violence and coercive control with my ex. I wasn't transparent with my psychologist in terms of that with my ex, but in terms of like all the comorbidities, I guess, that are linked with the trichotillomania, I was open about that. And she sat me down and she's like, hey, these are things that you can work on. And we're going to work on that together. And I think it's the first time where someone actually listened to me and told me, hey, something's going on here and we can work on it. There's something that we can do. Everyone prior to that, they would just tell me, you're too well. You're too logical. You don't seem anxious enough. You don't seem depressed enough for this therapy. We can't help you. You need to just accept this is just part of your life. And then, yeah, I met this one psychologist, and that's when things really started improving. I guess in terms of trichotillomania specifically, I didn't really find it helpful in the long term. It was more so the same thing where I'd get like a short-term fix of motivation, but it was never a long-lasting thing. It wasn't until I kind of took the time to research everything myself, that's when things really changed. I started seeing that psychologist. This was a time where, yeah, I'd been with my now ex for about 7, 8 years. I was dealing with the domestic violence and coercive control. At the time, I wasn't aware of that. It wasn't until I left that I realized that was what was going on. At the time, the purpose for seeing that psychologist is because my ex wanted the trichotillomania to be fixed. He never wanted to progress life with me if I had it. So for me, I guess it was like the last stand of like, hey, I'm gonna go get help. I wanna fix this. I'm gonna put in the time to work on myself, and I'm gonna work on the trichotillomania. And that's where like I started seeing that psychologist. And it was really helpful, I guess, in time to make realizations that hey, maybe the trichotillomania is not so much the problem. Maybe I am living a life where I don't feel safe. I'm not being treated in a kind way. I'm in an environment that is not beneficial to me. That psychologist I actually found quite helpful just to get the initial spark. I don't know what it was, but I just had this moment one day. She kept repeating to me at the end of every session, you're loved and you're worthy of love and you're enough. And I think there was just one time where I'd spoken to her every fortnight for like almost a year. And it wasn't until maybe a year mark where I really listened to it and it clicked. And it just clicked like, hey, maybe I need to leave this relationship and I'm going to be okay. Maybe this isn't all about trichotillomania. Maybe it's just the life I'm living isn't what's right for me right now.
What has your trichotillomania taught you?
Looking at it now from a very different perspective, I find trichotillomania, like the way that I see it and understand it, it's more so like a little alarm system. And it's like, okay, if I have urges or I start initiating and actually doing the behavior, maybe something's misaligned somewhere. Maybe I'm not taking care of myself. I kind of see it as a way, like it's my body, like my physical body telling me something's wrong, or maybe something is not quite right and I need to take care of myself. So I guess for me, that's kind of the perspective that I look at what trichotillomania is. If I'm doing it or feel the need to, or my I'm doing it unconsciously or moving in that direction, it's an alarm system. It's telling me, hey, let's pause for a moment, let's check in with ourselves, and let's just see, am I doing the baseline minimal things to be healthy? Am I getting enough sleep? Am I eating enough? Am I moving my body enough to the level that makes me feel good? Am I being vulnerable around others? Am I connecting with the right people? Am I being social? I guess it's just my way of like alarming, let's do a check-in, let's take care of myself. And I think for me, that's something that I really have learned with time to really appreciate about having a BFRB or trichotillomania. It's my body telling me something. It's telling me, hey, something's going on. You need to check in. Let's take care of yourself. So I think that's probably one of the main things that I'd say that I'm appreciative of. It's helped me to like prioritize learning about myself, and not even just about trichotillomania, it's just learning about myself completely altogether.